You're listening to The State of Love and Trust, a Pearl Jam podcast. Follow the show on social media and remember to rate, review, and subscribe to the show on your podcast platform of choice. Now, here's Jason and Paul.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of The State of Love and Trust. It's a Pearl Jam podcast. I'm one of your two hosts, Jason Carapesi, and alongside me, as always, wearing one of the shirts is...
Paul Guillieri.
Paul, how are you?
I am doing very well, Jason. How are you?
I gotta say, I'm pretty tired, but I am fired up for this week's episode. I know everybody out there who has seen us promoting it is fired up as well.
Clearly.
The internet's fired up. The people are fired up.
Yes. I think Pearl Jam might have broke the internet inadvertently. It was not their
first
intention.
It was Taylor Swift did that, and then now it's Pearl Jam again.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we've got a show today dedicated to tickets and tours and how one procures tickets to a Pearl Jam tour, notably the one that's coming up. Before we get to that, though, I just want to remind you, if you want, you can buy one of these things that Paul and I are wearing. They are our t-shirts that we've made, designed by a listener, Karen Tigerson. Paul's going to grab another one, I think.
For those
of you listening at home, this is the best part of the podcast where you...
Oh, yeah, isn't it? Look at this. Look at this.
Oh, look at that. Paul is holding... The Vitalogy album next to our Vitalogy looking t-shirt. You can buy those if you'd like, and we think they're pretty cool. They help fund the show, keep the lights on, hosting fees, all that stuff. If you want to join Patreon, there's some really cool extra stuff there. Behind the Poster with Brad Clausen is out now, episode 3. There's 3 of those. Stories Behind the Photos with Lance Mercer, another episode with Charles Peterson, bonus conversations with Kevin Martin, Dave Abbruzzese, Jimmy Schoaf, Charles Peterson. We got a whole bunch of stuff and other conversations, like with David Hudson from State of America podcast on reissued box sets. So all kinds of cool stuff over there if you want to get more out of the show. And if you just want to listen or watch the show here, that is fantastic. Give us a little subscribe and like down below on YouTube. That will help people find the show. If you're listening audio only, which is super cool, Paul, what should they do?
They should rate, review, and subscribe on that preferred podcast platform of choice. If you're wondering what that algorithm looks like that you need to feed, it looks a lot like the shirt on our guest this evening. A little snake, and it's hungry. Feed it.
Well, that guest that Paul's alluding to is the main man behind Concert Pants. It's Shihan Pereira. How's it going, man?
Going well. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
You are, this is your second time on the show. I think
it is.
Much like Saturday Night Live, once we get to 5, I think you get like a free like sandwich or something.
Sweet. I will look forward to that.
Well, you're in Austin, so maybe we gotta get you some brisket.
Perfect. I'll take that too.
Fantastic. Well, Shihan's here because A, you go to a lot of concerts.
Yes.
So you'll have some perspective on this whole concert ticket procurement thing that's happening right now in the Pearl Jam world.
Absolutely.
And also, you have a business degree. Like, you know money.
Yes, I do. I do. I do have a master's.
You understand the business.
Yep.
Yes.
I would like to think so. I hope so.
Some would say.
Some might say yes.
All right. So the triumvirate is here. We're going to discuss Pearl Jam's tour and the ticketing process. And we know that if you're out there and you're watching or listening to this, that you either tried and failed, tried and beautifully won out and succeeded in getting tickets to Pearl Jam through the 10 Club, or did verified fan presale, or did PJ Premium. You shouldn't have done that, but maybe you did. And then there's also verified fan to fan sale. It's coming soon as we're tipping this. It's not out yet, but fan to fan will be a thing soon, which avoids scalper fees. And we'll get into all of it. But getting a ticket to this tour has proven to be a thing. So much so that the internet is a flutter. So Paul and I were like, what should we talk about next week? And Paul goes, ticketing seems like an issue. And I go, you are right, sir. We should talk about getting tickets because that is a thing. So ticketing. Let's get kind of our 2024 tour CV out of the way so we can establish some transparency. Shihan, what did you apply for? What did you get for this tour?
So I did well this tour, which is not the case every time. I applied for 6 shows and I got 5. And the reason I got 5 is that 2 of them were MSG and I could only have gotten 1. Mm. So I actually did as well as I could have.
Okay,
sure, 100%. Yeah.
Well, I am limited in the shows that I can attend due to my family and work obligations. So I would say that, I pretty much kept it as local as possible. You know, they are not playing in the San Diego area. So I focused my efforts on procuring tickets to see them in Los Angeles at the Kia Forum. There are 2 shows there, and I put in for both shows and was fortunate to walk away with tickets to both.
All right. Nice. So Shihan, 5 for 6. Paul, 2 for 2. I also put in for both Los Angeles shows. I did get both of those, and I did put in for both Chicago shows and did get all of those. So
nice.
The 3 of us are understandably very lucky.
Fortunate.
Absolutely. Based on what people are saying or people are reading. So I want to put that out there to say that while we are fortunate, we are not deaf and dumb or blind. We see it all. So we're going to try and keep that perspective when we talk about this for those of you who are maybe are not so fortunate. So I wanted to get a better perspective before we even start talking about this, because even though we all read what's going on, we can read the tweets, we can read the Facebook comments, and there's a lot of them, Instagram comments, story replies, all that. I even got some emails. I even got a Word document, a story from one listener about how upset he was about his specific situation. And I wanted to talk to some of these people like face to face and really get a sense of what people are thinking and feeling. So I spoke to 4 people across the country, and actually one of them is in England, and got some perspective. And we've bundled it up, a nice little edited piece, and here it is. How long have you been a Pearl Jam fan?
I've been a fan of this band since I started hearing a few songs from 10, saw the MTV Unplugged special, and that was when it started for me.
I have been a Pearl Jam fan since probably 1993. I heard 10 on a friend's tape deck in their car. Once I heard Alive, I was hooked.
From about 1991, I guess. 10 saw the Southend-on-Sea, the Nottingham Rock City one, so way back when, really.
I've been a fan since the beginning, so since 10 was released.
When did you join the 10 Club?
I joined the 10 Club early on, but then my membership lapsed as I was focused on my kids and everything else, and I didn't think about it, and I rejoined in 2018.
Since 1997, or early 97, late 96.
Yeah, being in the 10 Club's way back when it was, you had to post stuff off and all that kind of stuff. So, long time.
I joined the 10 Club in 2000.
When was your first Pearl Jam show?
My very first show, Camden, New Jersey, the first time they played Camden. Unbelievable show. I met Eddie Vedder.
The first I went to was the Brixton, the 2 nights in Brixton in London.
First show was that Missoula 1998 show.
Seeing them in 1996 and in 2000 and 2018 and now in 2023 in Chicago.
So how many times have you seen the band over the years?
28. And I just noticed, like, since 2013, I've only been to 2 shows. Just, I think, family and also them not touring as much. That's kind of led into that.
Between 30 and 40.
Maybe 20 times now. Vegas 10th anniversary, been to a couple Vegas shows, Irvine, LA shows. Not as much as I'd like to, but enough.
What was your ticketing experience like for past tours?
Back in the day, gigs were accessible, so you didn't have to send money off for tickets, for example. And only when I realized I could get better tickets, then I kind of went through that, the 10 Club system, the priority ticketing thing.
And you generally got what you wanted through that?
Always, always, always. I've never had an issue. I've never not got anything. I don't know whether that's luck or the length of time I've been in the 10 Club.
These last couple of tours, 10 Club rejected me for the show in Chicago that we went to on September 5th. But we got tickets through the pre-sale code situation, but they're very expensive. You know, they were $600.
You have probably paid PJ premium.
Yes, exactly. Was it a lot of money? Yes. Was it fantastic? Yes. Was it worth to me every penny? Yeah.
If you get blanked, usually you can go on the Pearl Jam message boards and somebody will have an extra seat that you can coordinate with.
What shows did you try to get tickets to through the 10 Club?
The Philly shows and the New York shows. I left Baltimore out because of the price tag was hefty. My goal was really to just get one. Like that's all I really wanted. I mean, I would have loved to get one New York and one Philly. I live in a high demand area. I get it. Like, and I don't feel like I'm entitled that I deserve a show. I mean, my 10 Club number is 161. It's an old number, but I thought I'd get one. I had all those ranges of emotion that you described earlier, you know, from the beginning of frustration to, it's a supply and demand issue, right?
I applied and got two. I went for Dublin and I went for Manchester.
The two shows in Madison Square Garden in New York and the first show in Philadelphia. Applied to the 10 Club, got rejected. At the same time, my wife, my daughter, and I each applied through Ticketmaster trying to increase our odds of getting a code, a pre-sale code. And it worked. I got a code, they didn't, but at least one of us got a code. By the time my time came, there was literally nothing I could buy. The entire arena on the seating chart was gray. No blue areas whatsoever. All of a sudden, a couple of blue seats popped up. I tried buying them. And every time you hit, you know, purchase, it tells you already been sold. An hour goes by. Tried it again. A couple of seats came up. I bought them. I didn't even think about the price. And they were $900 a piece. My wife texts me, "What did you just do?"
I applied for both the LA shows. And I ended up canceling the requests for both shows because I just couldn't justify the pricing. And I wasn't too concerned about not getting picked in the lottery. It looked like they probably had enough seats that the odds were pretty good for people.
Do you think the 10 Club ticket prices are reasonable?
Well, I just don't know.
If you look at comparable acts, yes. Looking at my 1998, you know, mail in order or whatever we did in 1998 to get, I mean, it's they went up. I didn't necessarily have as big a problem as some people did, but not every, I can't speak to that because I'm not in their financial shoes. This has been a band that's fought for keeping prices lower. I think as they've gotten older, they've kind of not necessarily forgotten about it, but like, it's just, I mean, their costs are higher too. Like, getting their equipment to places. Like, I understand that.
It's market share. It's market value. You know, so yeah, $185 for a ticket for Pearl Jam's absolutely fair price.
I'm upset with the price from a Pearl Jam standpoint of view. I love the band, right? And they've had a history of working to keep their ticket prices low. You go to a Pearl Jam show, it's basically them on the stage with their amps. You know, there's no LED wall like a Taylor Swift thing. They keep things very simple and focus on the music. You know, they've said that they did that to keep the prices down, and I believe it.
Back in the day when you used to ring up to book things on the phone and you talk to a person, the booking fee would be them booking your ticket. But this is all automated now. I mean, Dublin was 163. Manchester was pretty much around the same. Seeing the prices pop up to the 10 Club, it just seems huge. I don't know why. I've been trying to rack my brains why, to the point where I said to my friends and my wife, this might be the last one I go to. Normally, I'd have ticked every box I could go to, figured out the travel through work. But yeah, I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't justify it. A lot of people that I spoke to feel the same. And these are hardcore fans that will get there the night before and they'll wait 24 hours in line to get on the rail. And even they're saying, no, I just can't do it.
You know, news came out they were touring. Here's the, you know, 10 Club pre-sale date. Everybody's excited, including me. I go, I look at the dates, I make my selection, I look at the $185 per ticket. So if I wanted to go to two nights, that was going to be $750, and you know, just shy of it. And that was hard to stomach, knowing that the seats might not be that great or they might be fantastic, but it's like, you know, if the Gigaton tickets made me take a pause, adding 30% plus to the price really made me stop and think. And I just couldn't do it.
If you're sitting in the upper deck, it shouldn't be the same price as if you're sitting, you know, in a floor seat.
what's your overall takeaway from the Dark Matter tour ticketing process?
I think I can speak for probably 99% of the population and say nobody likes Ticketmaster. their goal is to maximize their profits for their shareholders, not necessarily do anything for the bands or the fans.
People in the 10 Club are getting seats at reasonable prices, and I'm spending $900. So this is where they make up the difference, I guess, in what they're saving. Over here, they're making it up on this hand.
I'm not paying $700 a ticket. I'm not going to do that.
I just saw tickets. I bought, it was like a panic buy. I bought them. I was like, oh my God, what have I done? Passion, your emotion gets in the way of you making a rational decision.
And I don't feel like I deserve tickets. Like, it's a chance you take. I just wish, going into this, I knew how this was going to roll out. Because if I think the pricing probably scared me of trying for more shows. Oh, if I get 3 shows or 4 shows. Got to pay for it and also get hotels and, family obligations and work obligations, all those things come to fruition. And
my concern is if people spend that amount of money to travel to different shows, see 2 shows on the bounce, 2 hotel nights and different flights. And it's just concerning. But like I said, they've still got my money in the end of the day, but not as much as they would have had if it was a bit cheaper.
I think we could do better. I think there's got to be a better way. And I'm probably not smart enough to figure all that out.
Here's the thing with the 10 Club. If you're lucky enough to get tickets to the 10 Club, it's fantastic, and it's a fantastic service that Pearl Jam provides its fans. However, if you don't get in, then you're kind of screwed. You really have to pay a lot of money to see your guys play. And I think that the 10 Club should change its algorithm. I think it should favor getting the most fans possible one show instead of some fans getting 3, 4, 5 shows and everybody else getting shut out. It's great if you're going to see your 100th show, but what if someone's just as big a fan, listens to the music all day long, and has only been to 2 or 3 shows in their lifetime and really wants to go? That fan's going to be so excited to be there because that fan is experiencing something that hasn't been able to experience.
They're older. I get it. They don't want to tour as much. And if this is going to be their model, maybe we need to go back to, and I would never thought I would ever say this, but the one show per fan.
It's bothered me to the point where I second guessed getting any tickets, to be honest. But I thought, could this be the farewell tour? The single sounds great. Do you know what I mean? So I was just, it made me feel slightly not 100% sure. And I've never felt like that before at Pearl Jam. I'd like, I'll fly to Seattle. I'll go to there. It doesn't bother me. I'll pay it. But this kind of just irked me a little bit.
I understand the economics of the world have changed a lot in the last 3 years. I don't think they're going to worry about, hey, can we make an extra $5 or $10 off this ticket to line our pockets, to cover costs or something, sure, but not to get slightly richer.
I will bend over backwards to get to the shows I can do, and I probably will enjoy it. And at the time, I think it's worth every penny. But it's just a little bit disheartening.
Everything you could possibly look at has gone up astronomically since COVID and even a little bit before that. I coach a Division III cross-country and track and field programs, and our costs have tripled over the last couple of years. Like, it's just ridiculous just to travel and just to get food for your team. And I can't imagine, having big rigs and buses and, planes in areas. I get it. I think they probably did what they could to try to keep prices where they were. Because I don't look at them as greedy guys. Like, I don't think that's, that's them. I think it's just the way the world is.
All right, so we've heard from Ari, we've heard from Mike, we've heard from Bill, and we've heard from Simon, all the way in England. And I chose somebody from England / the UK because there was a big disparity over there when it comes to tickets this tour and ticket prices another tour back. So now that we've heard from them, let's kind of get into the point-by-point situation that we have here from 10 Club and the lottery and all that stuff, seniority, all the way through Ticketmaster and everything they had going on. So we all got an email from 10 Club. It was very long, very intricate. We got an email from Pearl Jam separately about verified fan on sale. There was a lot going on here. A lot going on here. You had to read a ton. There were different timelines for different countries. There were cutoff dates that were different. They changed some of the settings, essentially. So before, in other tours, you could rank if you wanted GA versus if you wanted the reserve seating.
Seats, yeah.
You could, many tours ago, you were limited to one show per tour. and one pair of tickets for that show. That's been a long time since that was there, but there's been a lot of changes over the years. So you really have to read these emails I did it wrong first too. And Rich learned me on that and said, you want to go ahead and check off everything. And I go, okay. Yeah. And so I did. And a good thing I did, because if I didn't, I probably wouldn't be going to Los Angeles. So with that said, how much of the trouble do you think comes from the change in 10 Club's situation?
Well, yeah. Some of it certainly, yeah, this time around, I was surprised. And perhaps the communication could have been better, because you just mentioned that there were two separate emails. But what I remember is actually the same email where they actually mentioned the verified fan, which they didn't call it this time, first. And then they talked about the lottery, and the two links were actually in the same email. Or it could have been actually onto the same page, but it was confusing. And if you did the first thing that was presented to you, all you did was registered for the presale code.
Right.
So right. I understand why people got confused there. I mean, like I have worked in software, you know, deployments and anything like that. Change management is the biggest part of it. And that was, I would say, confusing. Now, some of us are seasoned at this, right? We know what one of them is. We know what the lottery is. We know what it looks like. But I do see why some people got confused there. So to answer your question there, I would say that, yes, that was the first part of the confusion.
Paul, how much do you think people missing, because a lot of people said they struck out and they were, you know, annoyed that they've been in the 10 Club forever and they missed out on everything. How much of that do you think is just bad luck versus the fact that they didn't read the directions correctly and follow the directions correctly?
Well, as somebody who works in education and is a big believer in the value of reading directions, I can say with confidence that I reached out to you, Jason, on a number of occasions for help understanding how I'm supposed to get these tickets. I mean, I had some trouble with it myself, to be honest with you. It was a bit of a challenge. I found that I kept finding myself routed towards just buying tickets directly through Ticketmaster. And you kept saying, no, no, you got to go through 10 Club. And I said, I think I am, aren't I? I just had some difficulty navigating things, because you could very easily find yourself in a place where you very much are in the process of putting in a request to buy tickets, or at least attempting to reserve tickets. And you would come to find out that you weren't doing it the way that you maybe thought you were, you know? So I think that little bit certainly created a bit of a conundrum. I don't know if other fans were impacted the same way that I was in that regard. I didn't hear of anyone like outright losing out on the opportunity to get tickets. I mean, you had, what was it, like a week or something like that, essentially, to...
Correct, yeah.
So, I mean, you had enough time to, like, you know, employ some checks and balances and ask around and get some clarity on things, which to that end, I think that part was handled well. Like, it wasn't like, hey, they go on sale, and by the way, like, you got to put your request in the next, you know, 10 minutes or something, you know what I mean?
Some pre-sales are like that. Like, I forget which artist it was, but I remember getting an email saying, all right, we've announced the tour and the pre-sale starts in 36 hours. And you're like, I got to move money around. I got to like figure out what this is. And so I'm glad that 10 Club gave it, I think it must have been at least 5 or 6 days. Yeah. To get your request lined up. The problem, to your point, Paul, is that, and to your point, Shihan, is that the links were almost side by side. And because both of the situations were different looking to the last time around, even from last year when that little mini run, how you chose from a 10 Club perspective, your venues and your sections that you wanted to be in the lottery for looked different than the verified on sale, which is terminology that, you know, what does that even mean? Right. What's happening when I get a verified on sale? So even if I say that to you, it might mean something to somebody and it might mean something else to somebody else. And you have to then cross-reference it and be like, I got to read all this fine print now. Oh, yeah. this is for tickets, but only if I don't get the other ones, but then I could also get both, but I might not get chosen by Ticketmaster for this particular thing. But the other thing is 10 Club. Mm-hmm. So it's like in the heat of the moment. And as Ari was saying in his testimonial, that it's like, especially for the verified on sale, if you are in the heat of the moment and like you're hitting refresh and you're in the queue on Ticketmaster and you're, cause you missed out on your 10 club lottery, you're not in the right headspace. Everybody's so excited. They feel rushed that they have to like get it right and put in the thing. It's like they say it in the email on the website that it doesn't matter how quickly you put the request in. The deadline is 5 days from now. But we're all like crazy about it because we want to make sure we do it right and get it in. And so we don't have put our pragmatic brain on, right? So I think some of it has to do with the fact that everything looked different and there were changes, right? Mm-hmm. And like I said, I ticked off GA/P. What the hell is P1? GA/P1.
It was new. I mean, that was a new thing this time around, right?
Yeah.
Like there used to be a GA or seated and that's it. And then this time there was P1, P2. And, you know, I think it's a good thing they did that. It was something I was hoping they would do based on lessons learned from last time, where they actually thought that the worst tickets were the ones that were right beside the stage and right behind the stage. And that better tickets were the ones across the arena, but dead on. So you had people with higher, or rather lower numbers and higher seniority in the 10 club sitting far away from the band, and people who were new to the club sitting right like two rows away from them. And it was kind of like, hey, you got this wrong. Like those are actually good tickets. So I thought that there was going to be some kind of choice to say, yes, I would like behind the stage tickets, or I would like side stage tickets. Instead, they did it in terms of tiers, but it's still, I think, a good development.
And that's one thing I keep taking away from all this is that as I'm reading and trying to understand all the different machinations of this, is that it seems like the band was trying to improve from year to year,
right?
And make things fairer or make things
quote unquote easier.
The problem is when you keep changing things, people kind of get lost. And I'm still in Facebook chat groups of people who still don't understand what like verified fan to fan is, or still don't understand, you know, that the presale already happened or stuff. It's just like, yeah, if you're a busy person, you're not going to necessarily know all the differences. You're not going to read every single email. You're not going to be on all those things. It's understandable. So it's tough because if you don't keep up with it, you're going to feel lost and you're going to feel let down by the band. And I don't think that they obviously want that to be the case. No. Now, what do you guys think about when it comes to the lottery? You know, what they did this time around was with those two sections or three sections, whatever it was for the venue. If you applied for all of them, you were in the lottery for all of them. And they would start with the quote unquote best sections first. So if that's GA/P1, they'd start there. If you missed that, you get possibly pulled to the next section and so on and so forth. Seniority has no bearing on that. Everybody gets a fair shake. If you joined yesterday versus 25, 30 years ago, you have an equal chance to score one of those sections. It's only if you get allotted to those sections does your seniority help you get a closer ticket / get in the pit. You like that?
I mean, well, first of all, there's a non-zero chance that some fans only selected one of those three options, thinking that, which, you know what I'm saying? Like, well, I mean, I'm just going to pick, you know, the pit all the way down the board. Like I want to increase my odds to get into the pit. And then if you got squeezed out of that lottery, it's like, uh-oh, you know what I mean? You had no backup plan. So I went with all three options just to make sure I got in the building. But I don't know if that was clearly articulated. If it was, I clearly missed the memo. But what I can tell you is that when you have it structured in a way where there's going to be a lottery, and you know, one of our fan testimonials talked about this, and it was an interesting idea that was posed. I remember who it was, if it was Simon or one of the fans had suggested changing the algorithm. And I don't mean the algorithm that all of you good listeners need to feed. I'm talking about the algorithm that is used to decide which fans get which tickets and where. Meaning, instead of structuring it, and again, I don't know how the algorithm is structured. This is all conjecture, right? But if it is structured in such a way where it's about giving fans opportunities to see the most shows. Essentially, what you're doing is eliminating the possibility of more fans being able to see shows. So restructuring the algorithm so it prioritizes giving the most amount of people an opportunity to see them at least once on this tour versus, say, giving folks opportunities to see them multiple times. And I don't know if the algorithm prioritized that, where people would say, well, I got, and his argument was, how can somebody have like 6 or 7 shows and somebody else have none?
How can you be that unlucky, I guess, is my question.
Well, and maybe it's your fault if you only applied for one, but what if that was based on your means? Right. You know what I mean? What if you could not afford to go see them in some other state or some other city?
Well, that's what Mike was saying, is that he put in for both Philadelphia and both New York and chose not to choose Baltimore because in the off chance that he got all of them, he's
he'd be on the hook.
$1,500 or more. So you have to, now when it comes to within the venue, you were right with LA. It's like you just check everything because you can only win two. You can't get one for every section.
Right.
So I think my opinion is that if you went through there and didn't check off every single one and knew that you should to get a better chance to be in the building, that is on you. If you did not understand that or you thought it was like a ranking system, that's very unfortunate. And either you missed you missed it and that's super unfortunate, or it wasn't communicated properly, which is also unfortunate and on somebody else if the writing wasn't obvious. But yeah, if you don't, is it completely fair and level for everybody that's in the pool? Is it totally level, or is there some sort of like add-on that says, or should there be an add-on that says, if you haven't won any lotteries yet, your percentage bumps up so that you get a better, slightly better chance on your fourth and fifth? I don't know.
Well, so to go back to the way you said it before, like, could someone actually be that unlucky that they put, just take two people who put in 7 shows, all sections, right? One person got all 7, one person got none. To me, that's a confirmation that the system is working.
Right? It's random.
And that's because it is exactly, it's random. And random means that every entry has an equal choice. Like, nothing else goes into it that says, okay, you're going to get a slightly preferential treatment because X, Y, and Z or anything like that. And I actually like that about the system. I like that last time around, it was just GA or seated, right? And so GA went out first. And I had a friend who joined the 10 Club 2 weeks before the lottery and he got GA. I didn't, you know, so he was one of the first people to get pulled out for Fort Worth 1. And I was like, you know, that's kind of frustrating, but it's great. Like, there's incentive for people to keep joining the 10 Club because otherwise there would not be.
It's your first time, right? And you're like, oh my God, my first show, I'm on the floor.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, like, there would otherwise be no incentive not to. And the P1 and P2 is great too, because now suddenly you have more senior members. So lower numbers, right? Who may not have gotten drawn in P1 or GA, but got drawn in P2. So they might be front row of the balcony, right? But you have people who are newer in P1. So they're in the 100 sections. They might be further back there, but you've got a little bit more of a mixed audience. And you don't have the kind of same dynamic. You don't have different dynamics based on seniority geographically in the building.
And that's
I do think it's great. And,
that's what
and
Ari was
like
saying.
You said, you can opt out of it if you don't want to. Like, a lot of people kind of complain, and I agree with this, about the GA only option being taken away. Like, now it's GA or P1. Because there are a lot of people who would just say, I only want GA or I don't want it at all.
Yeah.
Now they're stuck with a ticket, right? And, you know, we'll get to face value ticket exchange, which I think is probably the biggest dynamic changer of anything Pearl Jam ticket related in, you know, probably the last decade. But you know, taking away that GA only option, I feel like that would actually, or if you put it back, I think there would be a lot more spots that are opened up for the other seats.
That's an interesting point. And we'll get to improvements at the end. I want to try to see if we can't figure out some solutions when we get to the end here. And we've already kind of mentioned a few options.
So there's
the lottery, to my understanding at least, is that it was super just even across the board, regardless of when you got in and to the club, I should say. And once you were accepted or chosen, then your seniority mattered. And that's why you're in the back or the front or whatever. So, with that said, let's talk about the verified, it's a slip of the tongue, verified fan presale, which was the second link that made you register with Ticketmaster. And Ticketmaster is the one who decided to choose people out of their hat, don't know how that algorithm works, to then get a code to be able to then go and buy tickets normally in the queue, in the lobby, the whole rigmarole that they have.
Yeah.
Now, Bill said it. We all hate Ticketmaster. I don't know that anybody would really defend Ticketmaster per se, but maybe you will, Shihan.
I might be that guy now.
You might be the unpopular guy. I'm here for it because I want to hear what you have to say.
Comes to their defense. Yeah.
So they chose people randomly. I don't know how they chose them. I say randomly. Who the hell knows? And you got a code, and you got to use that code to unlock the tickets, the non-fan club tickets. A lot of people, including me, because I wanted to see if I could get any better, showed up and there was nothing. Absolutely nothing. If there were any blue dots, they were all PJ premium, which we'll get to in a minute. Did this work? Was this a good thing? Do we like this as a second step to 10 Club?
I think this time around it did not. I think last year it did. I don't know what changed about Ticketmaster's own algorithm. And thank you for telling me that it's Ticketmaster that chooses who gets the codes. I wasn't sure. I did not know that for sure. And last time there was a very, very close and logical correlation between shows that you did not win in the lottery and where you got a code. So for example, I did not get Austin 1 tickets last year. I got the other shows that I had wanted, and Austin 1 was the only code that I got. So there was clearly a connection there for me, and it happened with a lot of other people that I spoke to. If you didn't get in the lottery, you got a code. Other people didn't get a code. This time, I did get a code for LA 2, and I'd already won tickets for it. So it was kind of like, you know, now there are people who didn't get in the lottery and didn't get a code, and I got both. That didn't make sense to me.
Right.
So, but again, if they've gone to random, sure, so be it. But it felt like it worked better last time.
I thought that. Well, I guess I don't know what the point of the verified presale is, because like if you're just choosing random people, it has no bearing on 10 Club's allotment or winners, shall we say, lottery winners. What is it doing? Just go straight from 10 Club to a general on sale, right?
I think the reason other artists do it too, because like I've had to enter verified resales for lots of other shows that are just very high in demand. It's actually just a way for Ticketmaster to control traffic to the site.
No, that makes sense.
Because if it's a regular on sale for anybody, right, you're going to get to that screen and it's going to say there are 80,000 people in front of you. But if they take, you know, kind of the random approach to it ahead of time and say, okay, here's how many people want it. Here's how many people we're going to give codes to, and we're going to give them out at certain times, right? Because sometimes you get an email that says you're on the wait list, and right, it might be 10 minutes after it goes on sale that you actually get a text and say, hey, it's your turn. Go and get in that line now. I think if anything, it's actually just a way of controlling traffic and, you know, keeping the site from crashing.
I mean, I can't remember exactly what happened with the Taylor Swift situation, but like, you know, basically her fans crashed the system, and I feel like verified was already happening before that.
But I've entered the Taylor Swift verified fan pre-sale. I've never gotten the code, but yes, that is how she does it.
Okay. So it would make sense then if it was purely a, we don't want to crash our servers kind of situation.
I think it would.
And okay. I would say that's justified. You know, yes. I would say it's justified.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about Pearl Jam Premium. I made a little reel because it seemed like people just did not get it. People did not understand what was going on. They're flipping out about prices. And as Bill and Simon said, they even thought the 10 Club prices were too high. Now we can debate that, and we will. But when you go on there, and like I said, for verified on sale, I went just to see, and the only thing things that were available were 972, 684, 823, like all this stuff, all these huge prices, and people are like, people, I don't think understood that this is part of the dynamic pricing structure that Ticketmaster has employed. And oh, by the way, dynamic pricing has been around for a long time. How do you think hotels and airlines work?
Yeah.
So, but no one really ever explains that, because why would they if you're that company?
Right.
So to say to them, don't buy those. And I know Ari was like, screw it, I'm buying them. Mm-hmm. But like, most people aren't going to spend that much money on a show. And no. Nor should they, in my opinion. But to take the chance to wait them out, or to wait out fan to fan, or to wait out that the band or the label or Ticketmaster themselves will release.
You're a running bunch of the tickets. Risk of not seeing them at all.
Right. Exactly.
And that
all of this is a measure of your risk tolerance.
It's exactly right. It's very frustrating, because this company is preying on your passion for a band. And I read something today where it was a comment on Facebook that made me go, oh my God, that's right. All these years now, Ticketmaster and everybody else has been tracking how much you've paid for certain concerts. They know how much you're willing to pay. Mm-hmm. So they are probably working with artists to say, maybe you should set the price here, because most of your fan base is willing to pay X for similar bands. And that's...
Yeah, no, you're right. I want to go back to your original.
Is that too
right?
cynical, Paul? Hold on. Is that too cynical?
Okay, go ahead.
No, I feel like what's tricky about this is going back to what Sheehan said, which is about risk tolerance and whether or not you're in it to mitigate risk, or whether you're not trying to play the upside gamble and say, hey, I'm willing to increase my odds of seeing them, and I'm willing to pay whatever I need to pay in order to get the experience that I want to get. And yes, an argument could be made that there's a predatory element at play, but I think that, you know, there's also a part of it that is not entirely in the hands of the band. You know what I mean? It's not like the band is out there saying, hey, we want to dangle $4,000 tickets to see us. You know, we really want people to spend thousands upon thousands to see us, when they know that fans will travel to see them. You know, and our friend in England made this comment. He's like, just the ticket prices alone through the 10 Club, when you're dropping $185 to go see a single Pearl Jam show, if you bought two tickets to see that show, and then you had to buy an airplane flight or two, and you had to get a hotel to stay in, I mean, this very quickly turns into, you know, a mortgage payment and then some. So now, how do you defend those kinds of things? Well, on one hand, you've had how many years now to start saving up for the next Pearl Jam tour? I mean, there's that argument, but the other side, it's not that simple. We had a pandemic. We've had, you know, economic downturn. There's a whole host I shouldn't say economic downturn, at least not here, but we've experienced, life happens, right? So it's not as simple as that. But I will say that when you are trying to see them, I think that you're going to fall into a handful of buckets. You're either the new fan who has never seen them before and you just want to get in the building. You are a long tenured 10 Club member and you're trying to see them as many times as you can on this tour. Or you're somebody who is only going to see them, you know, a select handful of times, and you're passionately concerned with where you're going to be standing for that show. I think the vast majority of us, if not all of us, fall into one of those three buckets. And there's different levels of risk tolerance in those three buckets. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Bill was talking to me about opportunity risk. He was telling me
opportunity cost.
He was the one that wrote me a letter, and that's why I wanted him to talk to me on camera, and saying how, you know, he's got things to pay for, like a new air conditioning unit, which is tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, life
and
happens, right?
That's what even I was though, saying. Yeah, and even though he wants to bring his son to his first Pearl Jam show, and listen, we have kids we want to take to concerts, and you know, God willing, Pearl Jam keeps playing so we can get our young ones there. I feel the same way as him. But sometimes you just can't do it. And I understand what Simon's saying, and I understand what Bill's saying. And so let's pivot out of PGA Premium, because, like,
well,
you
hold
said,
on. It,
Go ahead.
I don't think we finished the PJ Premium discussion because everything we're saying here and everything that those gentlemen said as well, they should actually be embracing PJ Premium. Like Pearl Jam and Ticketmaster, I can't remember exactly who sent the email, but they specifically said that it's 10% of the ticket allotment, right?
Yes.
That is priced as PJ Premium at market prices. Now, right away, that should tell you that 90% of the tickets are below market prices, right?
Right. Boom.
That win. They're treating us well. We should be happy with that, right? But let's say hypothetically it costs $1,000 to put on the concert, right? And there are 100 tickets in the building. We're just saying this for math's sake, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The easiest thing to do is to charge $10 a ticket, right? Because, okay, hey, if everyone pays $10 a ticket, 100 tickets, you've got $1,000. But what they're saying is now, hey, no, let's just take 10 of these seats here and charge them and make up $500 from just these 10 seats, right? What happens to all the rest of them? Now you have 90 seats that only cost $5.50. So it's like, hey, look, that's exactly how the prices are actually still that low for 10 Club. And we'll get to what the 10 Club prices actually are now, right? But the cost of production's up. The cost of everything is up.
Cost of travel.
Cost of travel is up. Like all of this stuff, right? I mean, if anyone is absolutely loyal and dedicated to their crew, it's Pearl Jam, right? I want the Pearl Jam crew to be making more. They probably all have kids now, like, you know, we didn't.
And they've been around since the early days.
Exactly. So, I mean, whatever, we can break apart, you know, the actual, where does the $160 get divided to, which is the actual ticket cost. But look, I mean, if you take the production cost, PJ Premium is subsidizing all of our tickets.
Yeah.
So, and people are paying them at market value. So, I mean, to me, it's a no-brainer. And like, there's just a misconception about it because, yes, it's only 10%. But like you said, when you go to Ticketmaster now, it's all you see. So people think that that's all that there actually is. But when you're looking at a venue of 16,000, right, you've got what? 1,600 tickets that are PJ Premium. So those are the only ones you see and you think, oh my gosh, this band is sold out. Every ticket is $900. But it's not. Like,
it's
10% of the tickets. It's subsidizing that price for the 10 Club.
I am totally on board with that because it makes total sense. And we can talk about whether $185 all in is not cheap, but reasonable. Because
sure.
Obviously some people don't. And that's different, totally fair.
Yeah.
I totally understand. I remember when I hit go to cart, I was like, that's a lot of change there. Especially for four shows. I mean, that's holy Jesus. But again, looking at other shows that are going on this year, Kings of Leon just announced the tour. Cheapest ticket in the building for them is $59, but the most expensive is $379. Those are face value tickets, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Rolling Stones, between $120 and $1,000. Those are resale prices, but probably not far off of the original. Eagles, $300 to $950, and the Chili Peppers are $200 and up. I think I saw as high as $550 at the Forum.
Right, well, $200 and up. I mean, that's probably a more apt comparison than the Eagles, you know.
I'm just saying, bands that have legacy in some regard. I'm trying to give Peppers are probably the closest of those.
And mind you, in those cases, the more money you pay, the better seat you get. Up another one for Pearl Jam, where they're giving everybody the same chance at the same price.
Yeah, level. And honestly, when you think about it this way, a lot of complaints that were levied would say, well, these tickets have gone up 20% or 30% from the last time I seen them. Well, think about when the last tour was. Cost of living increases alone are like 3 to 5%. So let's just take the high end of that scale, 5%. So if it's been just 3 years since the last album tour, to expect tickets to go up by 15% is not irrational. You know what I mean? Like, to me, that's just a basic cost of living increase. And when I say cost of living, I mean cost of production, you know, but you have to pay people to put these shows on. So whether or not, you know, if it goes up 30, 40, 50, 60%, that now we're starting to talk at a different echelon of
being increases. Questionable. Yeah.
Yeah.
And some people would argue that in their area, that was the increase. I know.
Sure. Europe.
That's why,
right?
That's why I talked to Simon, and Simon was saying the Hyde Park shows, which were a year and a half ago, were under 100 pounds. And now they're 170 pounds or something like that.
But doesn't it cost the three of us more to go spend a week in Europe than it would for us to go spend a week in Chicago, for example, where you're going. I mean, Pearl Jam doesn't reside in Europe. So I would imagine that just putting on a show abroad
What I'm saying is that, and I totally think you're right there, but I think the difference is that in a year and a half, it's made that jump. Has going over there changed that much over a year and a half to make that giant leap of price? Now, somebody did post the cost per pair of tickets by the 10 Club for the Riot Act tour on Facebook the other day. Yeah. I don't know if you guys saw that. And the MSG shows. Yes.
Yeah.
The MSG shows were $98 a pair. Now, a couple things here. $98 in 2024 dollars is actually $145.
All right.
That said, that's still about $200 less than what a pair costs now, because a pair is about $350, $360. So that's number one. Two, that was before Pearl Jam used Ticketmaster to do their fan club ticketing. They were doing it themselves at the time. Yeah. So they didn't have all that other overhead. They could do whatever they wanted to. I think it was the Gigaton Tour was the first time they got involved with Ticketmaster. And I think we were all like, what? That's just something to consider, and why people would get upset. Whether that's rational or not is another story. I'm not sure that it is. I get that that's a giant jump for 21 years. But also you're using Ticketmaster and all the things that go along with that. Just for a show of hands, do we think that $185 for a ticket to this band in 2024 is too much?
When you don't know where you're going to sit?
Correct, because it's the same for wherever you are in the building.
That's I'm on the fence. On one hand, I mean, I think there's a compelling argument for a yes and a no. And there's a lot of context and nuance that goes into that answer.
Jihan?
I agree with that. And I think, I mean, there's a lot more to that question than just do I think it's fair. I mean, I'm very lucky. We talked about this right at the beginning, right? I know that I'm extremely lucky to be able to afford that. And so for me, it's, you know, I'm obviously not going to the whole tour, but yeah, to be able to go to a couple shows on each leg of the tour is a luxury that I have, and I'm thankful for it. And I know that it's not the case for everyone.
Yeah, and to Bill's point, it's an opportunity cost thing, right? For some people, they can eat that for a couple of shows and satiate themselves. Other people can't do it. Other people can do even more.
Yeah,
I'm with you guys though in that I think if that's the best ticket in the house, if you're in the pit or the first floor section, maybe okay. It's 2024. That's Pearl Jam would expect their audience generally would have disposable income as opposed to their audience back in the 90s who were a bunch of kids who did not. I can see that argument being made. You know, this isn't Billy Joel. It's not like $500 a ticket, or Bruce Springsteen, which is also like $100 a ticket. That's a whole other discussion.
The age of most, I'd say the median age of a Kings of Leon fan is probably younger than that of a Pearl Jam fan, too.
Yeah, so exactly. At the same time, though, if I'm in the last row of the upper bowl at the Forum, and I'm paying $185. I don't know that I'm very excited by that prospect. if it was half the cost,
you'd be there if it were the Chili Peppers, right? For $185,
that you're going to have to be.
So, because that was the cheapest ticket for the Chili Peppers. Yes. I actually went to see the Eagles. I had the worst seat in the house, right next to the stage, on the second to last row, and I paid $200 for it. So yeah, like I mean,
it's
kind of market at that point, and everything else beyond that is bonus.
Yeah. All right, so let's quickly do a little bit more on Ticketmaster here, because I know Shihan, you got some theories, you got some ideas.
We talked well, a little. Let me tell you one thing about. I've got some numbers for you on some of the other tours. So I went back to 2016, right? The baseball stadium shows. Those tickets were $85 in 2016 for a Fenway ticket. Then we went up 22% in 2018 Fenway for $104. The 2020 shows a little less of a jump. We went up 18% to $123.
You mean 2022? The reschedule?
Correct. Well, we bought the tickets in 2020.
Okay. Right? Copy. Thank you.
And okay. So yes, we bought them in 2020. We used them in 2022. So there was no increase there. The smallest increase we ever saw was between 2022 and 2023, where it went from $123 to $133, just an 8% increase. And then from this time around, we went up 17%. From 133 to 156. Here's where it gets really interesting. What was the Ticketmaster fee for all of those? 2016, $19. 2018, $19. 2023, $29 per ticket. 2024, back down to $19. So this is where I challenge you again on Ticketmaster's greed. They have been consistent, except for 2023. I don't know why. Maybe that was post-pandemic and there was something going on that they needed to take more money. But they've actually come back down to their 2016 fee. So again,
now let me ask you this question.
Checked all my emails. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
Because that was something that Bill was talking to me about, where he was curious, just from a business point of view, just curious.
Yeah.
When it comes to the PGA Premium tickets, is it still that $19, or is it a percentage? Because he won't personally pay $800 to see Pearl Jam, but if someone wants to pay that, he hopes that all that or most of it would go toward the band, and the fee would stay the same. Do we know
that? I don't know, because I have not bought PJ Premium. I don't know, but if you did, I mean, like, we should actually ask him, because it would be in his ticket detail how much the Ticketmaster fee was.
Well, Ari did buy them, so I'm going to reach out, and I'll put that in the description of this episode or something like that. I'll put an addendum in text format somewhere.
Yeah, no, this is just the beginning of a big investigation, right? We'll use the data as we keep going along.
I love it.
But yeah, no, I mean, that is, like, to me, that's eye-opening. And to me, it doesn't support the Ticketmaster greed. Like,
I mean, listen, we keep hearing $19 per ticket is still a lot.
Sure.
I mean, sure. It's a lot of money per.
I think this, yeah. The salient point to remember is that there's no conclusion that should be derived from any of this, that the band has lost touch with the needs of its fan base, or I should say, nor that they are suddenly more inclined to want to increase their own take home. You know what I mean? I don't think they're in it looking to make more off of the fans than they traditionally have. I mean, within reason. I mean, obviously you're older and it's, you can't be sitting here saying, I want to make as much off this tour as I did in 1993. No, I mean,
yeah,
but I in no way do I think the band deserves to be vilified for anything that's going on
and
right
some
now.
Some people have been, and I agree with you. I just don't personally believe that that's their MO.
It almost hurts me personally, because I've, like, a couple times I've seen on some of the boards people posting the picture of Stone and Jeff testifying before Congress, and it's like, what happened to these guys? And it's like, oh gosh, no.
Like, they lost the fight, and it's like, dude, Live Nation, that owns Ticketmaster, owns 90% of the venues, if not more.
Yeah,
you have to work with the devil. I'm sorry. It's if someone like Taylor Swift wants to go and actually try again to prove that they're a monopoly in the system, God bless her, and maybe she could do it.
Pearl Jam's not winning that fight in 2024. No. If they tried again, you know where we would be seeing them right now?
Las Cruces Farm.
Thank you. You know, Canoctai Harbor with Poison and Rat. That's where we would be seeing them.
Yeah, they'd be one of those cruise bands.
Yeah.
In international waters. No fees whatsoever. Somebody actually on Twitter said to me, straight-faced, I believe, that the band should offer fan club members a couple of free tickets each tour. I go, you're telling me the 500,000 members that they have for $35 dues each year, they should just waive $300, $400 tickets just because? Yeah. I'm like, what is happening right now? What is happening right now? Insanity. I just have to say that because that blew my mind.
That right there would be pure philanthropy at that point. I mean, you're just...
Guys, Pearl Jam is a business. I hate to break it to you.
Yeah.
They are a business.
It absolutely is.
I'm sorry. It's just... $185 is not a lot of money.
No, it's but a substantial sum.
But you have to take your own opportunity cost with it. You have to say to yourself, how many times have I seen them? Am I okay with that number?
Right.
Can I drop this money, go, and not put myself in a hole that I can't get myself out of? This is a personal decision. No one is forcing you to buy tickets.
Now, hold on, though. I think that's a perfect segue into what are some creative solutions to address
Perfect.
Not these grievances, but rather these challenges. I'm going to posit one.
Yes.
Okay. Is there a way to finance a Pearl Jam ticket? Is there a pool that fans who are fortunate could contribute to? Even if it's minimally, like, hey, I'm going to buy my ticket. Like, when I go to CVS, I get asked, would you like to round up your purchase? And X amount will go to this charity, you know, St. Jude's Hospital, whatever it is, right? Would you like to donate $1, $3, or $5 at the grocery store to this particular endeavor? I don't see any reason why that, you know, the band, like, if I was a fan, and I'm buying a ticket, and I had the option to round up and know that that money was going into a pool that would produce tickets that are more affordable for other fans who maybe don't have the means to pay $185 a ticket, I'd be in favor of that. I would also be in favor of some type of an organization that is essentially accepting donations to create a pool that can then be, and it would obviously, it would fall on that organization's shoulders.
To verify,
you know, socioeconomic status of fans, and which is not a you know, risk or cost free endeavor in its own right.
What I was going to ask you is, like, I love the idea. The question is, how does the band then choose the person who gets the subsidized ticket? Like, how do you like have to put in your?
I never
score?
Said
like,
my ideas were pragmatic, Chase.
No, but I love it. I love it. It actually made me, when you were talking, it made me think of an idea that pivots off that, which is, you know, every ticket that you buy now, it used to be like $1, $2. Now it's $5 per ticket goes to the Vitalogy Foundation, which is great. Love it. Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
It's important.
What if you could go one step farther and say, I'm going to donate my time and do some community service down at Surfriders. If I put in 10 hours of service, I've earned a $50 credit.
Mm. Oh, that's interesting.
If it's a charitable organization that Pearl Jam works with, if it's helping to build skate parks with Montana Pool Service with Jeff, if it's something to do with Surfriders, like I said, Planned Parenthood, I'm sure would be one that they would help. Any one of these things, if you donated your time, isn't that what the band's about? Is helping others? If you're proving,
that's actually how the Global Citizen shows work.
That's right, exactly.
Because there were a couple of VIP tickets that 10 Club sold, but for like the majority of Central Park, it was actually just online activism.
Yeah.
That earned you enough points to do it. And doesn't Ohana do that too? Like where you can clean up, like if a couple bags of trash or something gets you.
I don't know if it's Ohana, like, but I know for a fact it's See Here Now, because when I spoke to Danny Clinch, that's exactly what he told me. And I said, I wonder if Ohana does that. But you're right. You pick up stuff off the beach, garbage, you get a ticket. Like just you get a ticket. Like there's got to be something in what we're talking about here that would work. Like I'd be happy to go and I'd probably have a great time too, help out wherever. And then my ticket's $120 now. Let's go. Let's do it. I think the other idea that a couple of the guys had, I want to say it was Ari and Mike. Maybe we have to go back to binaural era where it's like you get a maximum amount of shows. You can win. If you know, maybe one is not enough, maybe it's two or three.
I think in that way, there are probably easier ways to do it too, right? So for example, this time we know the technology and the algorithm exists, right? Just implement the Madison Square Garden rule on any city that's got two shows, right? You could only win, a single account could only win one of the two nights for Madison Square Garden. They could have done that for the Forum. They could have done that for Vegas. They could have done that for any one of the cities that had two nights. Wrigley, Fenway, I think most of them, Seattle. And they all had two nights, right? So immediately now, lots more people have a better chance at getting picked.
The only wrinkle with that is, because I like it, because it reminds me of back in 2000 when if you wanted to go to all three Jones Beach shows on Long Island, you weren't guaranteed, but you were a very good shot of getting one of those three shows through the 10 Club. And then you'd go on Ticketmaster and take your chances and probably get tickets for the other two. The thing is now, as many people have pointed out, is the band does not tour nearly as much. They don't go to nearly as many cities. And the people who want to go to a lot of shows now have a little bit more money to do so, I think, on a median scale. And so you've got this supply and demand thing that Mike was talking about. It's like, what are you going to do?
So, well, not only that, but I mean, what if you can't afford to travel? So
yeah,
the only shows you can see are the two in your local area, and that might only be two. Now you're being told
and what
you're only allowed to go to one of those shows, whereas somebody else who can go see them in five different cities has is, you know what I'm saying? So it's
yeah.
There's no easy way to create equity with this.
Exactly. There's a cost benefit on all of it. I would say though, like, and so we can take one grievance, right? We can take one grievance at a time here. So one of them being the ticket price, but one of them being, look, I think a really common theme was just the whole, hey, I didn't get picked for anything, right?
Yeah.
The reason this is happening and why it's going to always get, your chances will always get worse and worse and worse because this fan base is continuing to grow. That's a great thing. There are more 10 club members. That's a great thing too, right? But how do we actually make easier for someone to win the lottery? We have to reduce that pool. What I think is the biggest factor that's happened in the last few years for the lottery on all of these shows is face value ticket exchange. Face value ticket exchange has taken away all of the risk with ever having, like we did back in the day, tickets in an envelope with your name on it, burning a hole in that box office because you couldn't make it. There was a time where we put in our request, right? And if you didn't make it to the show, that envelope sat there with your name on it. And that was it. Now, provided you can afford it, there is nothing to stop anybody from putting in for every single show just to see which one you got GA for, just to see which one you got good tickets for, and then just put the rest back on fan to fan.
And you know someone will pick them up.
Exactly. And I think because of that, probably every city has so many more entries in that city-specific lottery than in the last couple of years.
But it's not just that, Shihan. I mean, Jason, I'm going to use you as an example here. You are P2, right? Those were your seats in LA. You readily said, I'm going to see if I can go get these other tickets, and I'll just put, if I get better seats, if I get on the floor, I'll just throw these other ones on there. That luxury didn't exist in the past, right? So there, no world would you take the risk of saying, I'm going to end up with four tickets to this show and risk eating that. You know what I mean? You wouldn't. But now
it is an incredible luxury. I mean, face value ticket exchange. I don't mean to pivot to this early, but I mean, it is seriously, it is a gift from Ticketmaster. It is a gift from the band. It's this ability to upgrade. It's like taking the risk out of anything. You don't have to have your schedule, you know, defined 6 months before time. If plans change, hey, okay, I'm going to change up my tickets here.
No, there's no guarantee that you'll sell them, but
you take that risk for sure.
But there is a good chance considering people who have missed out.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
I can tell you personally, like on shows that I've gone to, I have bought and sold multiple times per show just to upgrade row by row. And like, no, but honestly, and I have friends that have done it too. Like friends have bought and sold maybe 60 times.
What, per show?
Total.
Holy moly.
Yeah. No, but there's literally no, and okay. Like if I'm going to give Ticketmaster some credit here again, right? They didn't have to do that. I've only seen it for one other artist. They leave a lot of money because they own StubHub too. They leave a lot of money on the table by implementing face value ticket exchange for every city except the ones where the states mandate and protect.
Yeah. You know, I was going to say New York, right? And Illinois.
Exactly. And Colorado.
Colorado, sorry.
Okay. But,
which they're not playing this time around.
But yeah, like they could make a lot more money. I could give you a scenario of it too. But anyway, not just that. They don't even charge you an extra fee every time you do it. They don't charge you $2 every time you've bought and sold on Fan to Fan.
Good point.
You make everything back. What else did they improve from 2022 to 2023? You used to have to wait till the end of the tour to get paid for your Fan to Fan sale. Last year, you got paid in 7 days. They keep improving the experience. And this is Ticketmaster, I'm telling you. Again, I'm going to be the most unpopular guy on the boards once this comes out. But this is
okay.
Ticketmaster. Making all of these changes for
our benefit. It's right in the name, Shihan, the master of tickets. Hello.
Exactly. For our benefit, though. Like, it is helping us. It's find the cost of freedom, guys, right? Like this is what it is. We might have much worse chances in the lottery, but I would love to see all the great folks that we heard from earlier. Like, what did their experience end up being at the end of the tour once Fan to Fan opened up as well?
Yeah, and Mike was saying that he missed out on pretty much all those shows, but and his wife was like, yeah, so I guess we're not going to go. And then he says, well, hold on, because yeah, we might. Mm-hmm. Yes, and I think that's where this conversation stops right now, because FanFan isn't open yet, and I'm curious to see. I think we've put out some really interesting ideas that could better improve all of this going forward if you know, we're not the focus group for the band. But maybe we could be.
Could be.
If they're interested in maybe just tweaking things a little bit more. But yeah, I think overall, and again, we are lucky. We are fortunate to have gotten pretty much all of our requests. And I get that. And some people said that they have been shut out for like tours in a row, multiple tours. And that sucks. And I don't know why that happened.
True. I don't know
how much it's unluck versus, I hate to say it, user error or something else. I don't know. All I know is that there is still hope. Fan to fan is a good thing, as Sheehan proved and pointed out. Do not buy PJ Premium, okay? Those will drop. The band, the label, Ticketmaster, credit card companies will release tickets.
Unless you can afford Pearl Jam Premium, in which case you are assisting with that subsidizing.
That's true. Thank you, Ari. And everybody like Ari.
Thank
for
you.
Just
yeah,
go
exactly.
ahead. But you know, if that's an insane price to you, don't buy it. But if you can and you don't mind it, fuck it, go for it. Good for you. But yeah, we got some time. We got a few weeks before this tour kicks off, fan to fan. Let's just hang in there, guys. As I said in the Instagram reel, stay on the Facebook groups, stay on the boards. People will help you out. You know, Bill says
it's
the
a great
same
community.
Thing. It's a great community. We're it here really for is. Each other. And listen, the three of us are going to be in LA together. There'll be a beer shared or a few beers shared. Excellent. Yeah, is your wife coming out too?
No, she's not.
I was gonna say the wives would be there too, but
yeah.
Anyways,
have to convince her.
I think we ended there. I hope that you guys out there got something out of this. I know it's an hour of ticket conversation, but obviously, judging by the number of comments and posts online, this is a thing that people are talking about.
People are passionate about this.
Yeah.
They have very very firm positions on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's our money, man.
It is. If you're still mad, be mad. I understand. I hope that you find a way into the building, though. Just be in the building.
But don't be mad to the point where you lose touch with why you love this band, why you love their music, and why you love this community. That's the only thing that I would say as a caveat.
True.
Absolutely. Good words to end on. Well, Sheehan Pereira, Concert Pants. When's your next show?
It's this weekend in Seattle. It's the Loose Groove. Well, I guess by the time this comes
out. By the time this comes out, you have already gone. Yeah, how exactly. was the Loose Groove review?
It was
Sheehan?
Awesome. Yeah,
wasn't it great?
It was great. Yeah. Didn't you see all the pictures I posted? No.
That one shot of Stone was great. Mason Jennings?
For sure.
Oh, my God.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's the next one coming up.
Well, thank you for joining us yet again, Sheehan.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate it.
It was a pleasure, man.
And anybody out there, if you're interested in more content, we have a Patreon, we have bonus episodes, we have other videos with Charles Peterson and Lance Mercer, like I said, behind the poster with Brad Clausen. Oh, baby, that dude can talk, and it's a lot of fun. And
he's
got t-shirts.
He's great.
Everybody, t-shirts. T-shirts up.
Get some t-shirts.
T-shirts?
Look at that.
T-shirts.
Okay, shilling is done.
Shilling is done.
Thank you, everybody, for watching or listening. Paul, what should they do if they're on their audio platform?
They should rate, review, and subscribe on their preferred podcast platform of choice.
And if you haven't already, please
feed that.
I jumped the gun, Sheehan.
You did.
I can't get in the way of the algorithm. It'll eat me in my sleep. If you are on YouTube, like, subscribe, bell, ding, 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 ding. Please, thank you. And we're going to see you next week. And until we do, you've been listening to
The State of Love and Trust.